Welcome back. 1144, 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. And joining me now, David Keene, Washington Times opinion editor. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm just great. It's good to be with you.
Thank you for joining me again. I read your column this morning, Free Speech for Me, But Not for Thee. What happened to free speech for all of us?
Well, I don't know. I used to joke, you know, Andy, that the only person I know that really believes in the First Amendment is Nat Hentoff. And that everybody else believes that they ought to be free to speak, and that's what the First Amendment is about, but other people not so much.
Yeah.
I said that half-jokingly for a long time, but it's becoming very true on the left, where you have a whole culture emerging in which there's a belief that it is morally all right to shut down your opponents, as Chuck Schumer put it when he said the IRS ought to be used to target the Tea Party and other groups that are critical of the Obama administration. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that wouldn't have been true among liberals. Liberals then really actually did believe in free speech. They protected obnoxious folks and did it. Today, that's not so true. I mean, you get the situation in New York with Schumer making these arguments. You got what's going on in Wisconsin, where a district attorney is trying to silence advocacy groups. And yet all of this is targeted at folks that are right of center. And they try to cloak it sometimes. Schumer says, well, I just think all nonprofits ought to be investigated.
Yeah, okay.
I believe that one, Chuck.
Uh-huh.
And the administration says, well, the IRS was really looking at everybody. We know they weren't. The evidence says that they were looking at people they disagreed with.
Yeah.
And whenever the state uses its power and politicians manipulate that power to silence their opponents, that's a threat to the entire system because a democratic republic depends on a population that can get the arguments that they need and that on the issues that they're going to vote on. And if you can silence one side, that gives you such an unfair advantage that it's really difficult to cope with.
Yeah. I think you even mentioned someone who said, well, that's just the way it should be.
Well, in Wisconsin. Exactly. In Wisconsin, the prosecutors were stimulated to launch this most recent investigation by one of these left-wing advocacy groups in the state. And when the chairman of that group had a press conference, a reporter actually asked her, he said, you know, this was an investigation of coordination during the Walker recall campaign. It turns out that under Wisconsin law, even if they found somebody coordinating, it wouldn't have been illegal.
Right.
But the reporter said, well, you know, millions of dollars were spent in that campaign. Half of it was spent by left-wing advocacy groups. Do you think they should be investigated? She said, well, no. She said this whole idea of some kind of equivalency between right and left-wing groups is just not right because we're doing good and they're doing evil. And this has become a very prevalent view among left-wing groups and left-wing advocates and progressive liberals, if you will. Some years ago, when I was at the American Conservative Union, we filed charges against the Brady Group, the handgun control group. With the FEC for activities they'd undertaken during the campaign. We ultimately won the case and they were fined. But their lawyer actually argued in front of the commission that the laws regulating campaign activities, which is a regulation of speech, weren't meant to apply to groups like the Brady Group because they were doing good. Those laws were passed, he claimed, because the Congress wanted to rein in groups that were doing bad, which would be the people that disagreed with them. You know, and when that kind of thing begins to prevail, you've got a problem. I was thinking about it the other night, and we are creating a culture of intolerance. And it starts on college campuses with these speech codes and things, so that we're educating a generation of people to believe that folks who say things that are politically incorrect, who take positions that they find to be politically incorrect, ought to be shut down, ought to be cut off, shouldn't be allowed to speak. And I think as those people graduate and go become active in politics and the rest, it doesn't bother them to use the power of the state to silence their opponents.
Yeah. You know, it just occurred to me that by what you just said, we could be generations away from getting back to where we should be.
Well, that's the problem, and that's why education is so very important, and
it's
why activities designed to bring young people into an understanding of the Constitution and the freedoms that are traditional to this country is vital, because they're the people, they're the men and women who 10 years from now, 20 years from now, are going to be making the decisions. And if they become comfortable in a culture that does not value freedom of speech, then freedom of speech is going to be under fire for a long time.
Mm-hmm. My guest is David Keene, Washington Times opinion editor. It's 11:49 at WRC. All right, I want to take you in a couple of different directions, if I may. John Kerry likens climate change to terrorism, poverty, and weapons of mass destruction. A little over the top.
There's a man who's never visited a battle site. You know, I mean, this is a guy whose core beliefs are so different from everyone else's that it's almost hard to comprehend.
Yeah, Gingrich said he ought to step down from making those comments.
Well, when I was in Israel last summer, they said when 9/11 took place here, and the attack on the Capitol, and a lot of the members of the Senate and the others were down there. It turned out that Bibi Netanyahu who was not then prime minister was here. And he went down to talk to some of them. They asked him to. And Kerry, then a senator, said to him, what did we do to stimulate this? And the guy said, Netanyahu just looked at him and said, if you believe that the attack on the Twin Towers was your fault, I have nothing to say to you.
Yeah, honestly, that's true. I'm going to take it in yet another direction. Barack Obama says buying Obamacare is part of growing up. That in an interview with Charles Barkley, a hard-hitting interview on TNT. Part of growing up is buying Obamacare?
Learning, it's a way to teach you that the government isn't your friend.
That's what it's all about, I guess.
I mean, he's equated it with patriotism. He's equated it with everything. And this is part of this whole way they look at the world. I mean, if you don't buy it, you're either an adolescent, there's something wrong with you, you don't appreciate the America he's trying to build for you.
Yeah.
It's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's not his fault.
Yeah.
If you can't get through that web page that they designed, that's really your fault, too.
Yeah.
And you need to get in there. And if you're a young person and you're not willing to sign up and pay the extra money that you're going to have to pay because of your age, well, that's your fault, too.
Mm-hmm. Ted Cruz, he appears to be the maverick, not John McCain. The Tea Party loves this guy, but Rand Paul says the Republicans will not win another presidential election unless there is a major shift within the GOP. Not a little tweak. He said it's got to be a major change. Is he right?
He's right in a sense. You know, I was in Wisconsin last week and had a meeting with Scott Walker, the governor out there, mm-hmm. who, as you know, took a truly blue state and turned it red.
Yeah, I know.
And he said when he won that governorship, he also carried both houses of the legislature for the first time in 40 years the Republicans were in control. And so he went to the legislature and he said, you know, they've fired the other guys, they've hired us, and they're going to give us a chance. And if we don't deliver, they're going to fire us and we might not be back here in a long, long time.
Yeah.
He said a lot of the legislative leaders were upset because legislative leaders tend just institutionally to work on the margin.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so this is our chance. This is our time. We do it, we'll be back. We don't do it, it's going to be over. And really, when you think about it, that's really what the public mood is right now. The so-called party establishment, and it's a lot different than it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, because both sides are really conservative, but it's a tactical and strategic argument, has a point when they say, we can't do some of these things because we don't have the votes. They're in a position where if they get the votes, then it's put up or shut up time.
Yeah.
And so if they win the Senate, if the Republicans win the Senate this fall, and there's a possibility, maybe not a likelihood, but a good possibility that that'll happen, then they'll have the two houses of Congress. And then it's time to deliver. And if they can't deliver the two houses for real reform, if the president vetoes it, that's fine, because there's a presidential election coming up in two years. But
mm-hmm.
the Republicans cannot win both houses of Congress and say, we can't do anything.
Yeah.
They've got at that point to start delivering.
Well, Scott Walker definitely showed that it can be done.
It can be done.
And I love the fact that they ran the surplus, and he said, well,
we'll give it back.
Give it back.
Yeah. What a shock.
That was. Yes, what a great idea.
None of this rainy day fun stuff. Let's just declare a dividend.
Yeah. All right, my friend, I'm afraid we've run out of time for another week. Please come back. We'll do it again. It's always good to talk to you.
I sure will. Thank you.
All right, folks, if you haven't read it, check it out. Free Speech for Me, But Not for Thee. It's by David Keene, Washington Times opinion editor. It's 11:54, 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.